When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Sissoko finally waited. Eriksen low. Great ball into the middle. What a save by Heaton. Tonight's Davinson Sanchez, Lucas Moura. And belted into the net. Brilliant goal. On debut, Tunde Ondombele has scored the equaliser for Spurs. Lucas Moura clips it. Oh, great goal! Stephen Bergwijn has arrived in North London! That is absolutely incredible on debut! Aurier! What a finish for 3-2 from Serge Aurier!
First time here to Son. Kane, good area for Spurs, and Kane's not afraid to shoot! Wow, what a goal, Harry Kane! That is exceptional! Try and place it. Wonderfully taken by Eric Lamella. Never afraid to take on a shot, and with good reason.
Terry in the Burnley back line, and Son breaks forward. Oh, wow, what a run! Heung-min Son, from inside his own half, has scored one of the best goals of his Spurs career.
Welcome to the new Spurs Order. We are host today, Ty. And I'm joined with a lot of my brothers today, man. We got a good turnout, obviously, celebratory vibes. First, I'll start with Corn Michaels himself, NSO's very own era. How are you, my brother?
Happy to be here, my brother. Happy to be here, man. See the man them handing out some sweet chin music in the past few weeks, you know. We're going to touch on that soon, though. Let's see what's going on.
Yeah, some chins are getting checked. Macho Man, NSO's Ohio. How are you, man?
Oh, man, I'm happy, man. It's a happy time, you know what I'm saying? Rough couple of weeks, you know what I'm saying? But it's a good time to be a Spurs fan, which we don't get to say often before a summer transfer window. But, you know, we'll touch on that one.
1-2-3 kid himself, X-Puck, Owen. How are you, man?
Yeah, man, I'm feeling energized. It's dripping down from... You feeling energized from the main pod? It's reflecting, and yeah, I'm feeling it, and I'm feeling inspired. So yeah, let's get it.
You just gotta make sure you get Mariah's mispronunciation of your surname back in blood, my guy. Tops, man. Booker T, how are you, man?
Yo, what's good, man? May the fourth be with you all tonight, man. Honestly, I tell you what. I'm really, you know, the kind of person that works with a lot of pharmaceuticals, but if I was into recreational drugs, they would be hitting right now, man. They would be absolutely be hitting right now. But otherwise, I'm good, man. I'm with the boys. We got a little thing, you know, secured. Everything patterned, ready for the summer. I'm good, man. I'm good.
Nice one, brother. You got to move that mic from your top. But... Last but not least, the man himself. We like to call him the gaffer. We might have to change your name, though. You're more like Eric Bischoff than Don Antonio. keeping with the theme. But yeah, we got Dave with us today. How are you, man?
I'm all good, man. I'm all good. Listen, it's a good week. It's been a good 2 weeks, actually. It's been a long time since I've been on the pod. But a lot has happened, so I'm excited to see how we can chop it up with the bros.
100%. So just some housekeeping before we get into the literal shits and giggles, because there's going to be a lot of that today. Make sure you're following us on Twitter at New Spurs Order, all one word. The Instagram, same thing. And as you may have noticed, we are now on a new feed. So we are on the Touchline Community YouTube feed, so make sure that you're following that, get your alarm bells on, all of that good stuff, so you keep up to date with the team. So yeah, speaking of team, going into the last game of the season, obviously there was a lot to play for. I admittedly didn't see the game because it was pure fracas, at headquarters on the main pod. So diving into that game, let's start with you, Dave, our resident correspondent. What were your thoughts going into the game?
Yeah, let's be honest. Well, we needed a draw to secure the bag. It's one of the ones where everyone wants to remind you of what's happened in the past, Newcastle, 5-1, all them kind of ones. But actually, funny enough, the Spurs account, who I stopped following during the dark days of Ryan Mason and then when, they actually put out a video about the whole game, I think, which was the year after the Newcastle game, when we pumped them 7-1. So that kind of restored my faith in our final day versus relegated team kind of stock. And actually, all week I said, you know what, whether you trust Spurs or not, I trust Conte. And I think we all knew that Conte would get the boys ready. And as soon as the game kicked off, it was very much clear, one-way traffic. You know, Pookie had a couple, you know, half chances ways, you know, he looks like he might be able to create something. But for the most part, it was almost like we were just waiting for us to score. And what I actually really appreciated and what carried through for the whole game was that actually Carrow Road sounded a bit like White Hart Lane B. I think I tweeted about this. It was so loud coming through. And I was watching on my phone because it wasn't televised. It was so loud hearing the away fans, you know, singing all the songs, whether it be Bentancur's song, Kulusevski, Antonio. It was just such a nice little party atmosphere. And actually, I had actually been in Norwich that weekend. And as I said in the group chat, all the taxi drivers actually wanted us and were okay with us winning because they didn't want the Gooners to get into the top four. So they had pretty much kind of gone with it and said, ah, you know what, it'll be a bit of a party atmosphere. It sounded like that. And before you knew it, we put five on it.
Speaking of five, it's only right that we go to our five-time correspondent, Booker T. Walk us through the goals, my brother.
Oh, man. It was a funny one, you know. When I thought about the game, I remember thinking, half of these Norwich, man, I don't even know, you know. Like, I was thinking, these men might have a bit of a jolly up today. I can't lie. From the off, they were giving Højbjerg, Benton a lot of time and space on the ball, making off-the-ball runs, off-the-ball assists. And to be honest with you, it looked like it was going to be a bit of an easy day from minute one. From even the minute when I seen Benton finding a bit of space in the sort of attacking third from
Can you use your laptop, Mike? It's crackling like a mother, my guy.
Oh, is it? Oh, one sec. So, how's that?
Can you hear me now? Yeah.
No, sorry. Yeah, like even from the get go, it was a bit of a. I don't want to be rude and say, you know, they were pathetic, but it was just a bit of a walkover.
It was a training match. Say it, bruv. It was a training match.
Like, by the end of the season, you know, they have nothing to play for. And Tottenham came here and honestly rolled them over. Like, Benton, Højbjerg had so much time and space on the ball. Kane, Kulusevski, Son were getting into lots of attacking positions. Benton, who I, from what I understand, you know, was really, really getting into lots of promising areas. Nicely assisted two of the first goals for a tap-in for actually both Kane and Kulusevski. Kulusevski gave us an absolute cracker with his goal for the third. And then Sonny's last two goals were excellent. A great little assist from Lucas to play Sonny in. And then honestly, what was the icing on the cake to get him that golden boot, that quality finish right towards the end. So you know what? It was routine, you know, that sort of game. It should be a 5-0 against someone like Norwich. That I can't see anything less. And to be honest with you, that was a team that I thought knew they had a job to do and they were just extremely ruthless.
100%. Error, anything to add on that particular performance?
I just want to highlight Kulusevski came to prove something that day, man. Like, he was a menace. They could not deal with him. He was in and out. Even when he had his little shaky moments, like right before the goal, he had that moment when he went through, could have maybe put it across goal or smacked it with his right foot, but just maybe lost his balance a little bit. Didn't lose his head, like straight away. I think it was within 5 minutes when he scored that the goal afterwards. You know what I mean? Like, Kulusevski was on fire. Bentancur was on fire. And it's like, if we're bringing players in and they're changing the mentality of the team, man, like, I'm feeling good right now. I'm feeling positive. I'm feeling like I'm trusting. It's the first time I felt like really there was a plan. If you get what I'm trying to say, like an overall plan. Like, yeah, man, I'm feeling charged. I'm feeling charged. I love what I saw in that game.
Yeah, it's good to hear. It's crazy how a performance like that can cap off a season and almost reinvigorate the fan base before the new season. Owen, we'll finish off with you on Norwich. Did you see any signs of, well, let's encapsulate like the end of the season run, I'd say. What was your mindset going into that final stretch? Were you confident? Did you feel like we had the minerals, if you want to put it that way? Or were you your usual sort of semi-nervous?
I'd say the nearer it got to the game, PTSD was getting the better of me slightly. But just how like that running ended up panning out for us towards the end of the season. So obviously we had the wobbly games against Brighton and Brentford. And obviously the term beginning with S, ending in Erzy, ended up in like being spewed out again. And obviously we gave Arsenal the initiative to end up having top four in their own hands. But this is the first time since, I guess, Pochettino, where I've had faith and pride that a team and faith that a team can essentially just do the business, turn up when the chips are down and get the result we needed. So like away at Anfield, it's insane to even expect a point from there. But I was fairly confident going into that. Leicester at home, chips were down, needed to win, done the business. Burnley at home, Arsenal at home. And when we get to Norwich away, bottom of the league, relegated, you just kind of think, okay, if this is the game that goes wrong, then, boy, then we don't deserve top four. But again, we turned up, trusted the plan, and before we knew it, we provided the foundations for not only top four, but for our star man of the season to get his golden boot.
Yeah, that was an amazing moment, to be fair. You could see how much it meant to him, and obviously he's taken his boot trophy all the way to South Korea to parade it to his millions and millions of fans. So yeah, man, real good professional performance, and obviously with top four being on the line and us literally just needing to not lose, I think it brought a lot of pride to everyone, I'd say.
Can I just say on that goal, obviously a great goal, but you can tell from the celebrations, like how the whole team was lifting him up, the whole team, like you can tell like they all winning it going, look, if you've got this, we're going to get it to you. Do you know what I mean? And once he'd drawn level, there was a lot of attacks where you can tell they were like looking for Son, like where is he? Can we get him the ball? Can we get the ball? And then for him to score the way he did, where it was like, actually, you know what, run this, I'll do it myself. He lashed it in, and I think it was almost like a competition between him and Kulusevski for who could, you know, end the season in better style. But to have a front three like that, and I think it was fitting that they are the ones who sealed it for us and with that win, you know, because Bentancur with his assist, but definitely those front three have been the ones that have kept us through that 11 game run. I think we won 8 out of our last 11. Like, it's those front three that have been firing. So it was fitting that they were the ones to kind of give us a little final flourish. And then here we are celebrating top four and much more, hopefully.
One more thing. I'm just so glad it happened to Tim Krul, man. Couldn't happen to a better guy.
Yeah. Right, he's been an annihilator before, man. Yeah. It had to be him.
And also fuck Gary Lineker for trying to start that rumor the day before. Fucking pussy.
Oh my days. That was, I had me stressed though. I can't let you know.
I had Owen's crazy. Owen's PTSD was in like high order.
For those of you that don't listen to Gary Lineker, the story was that Harry Kane came down with some form of virus or illness before the game, which obviously put a lot of doubt into how we were going to line up I think we all deep down knew that it was Fugazi. Almost as Fugazi as some of the comments that were made in the lead up to the game, to be honest. And when I'm saying the lead up to the game, speaking quite a snapshot of time, to be honest. So we're going to do something a little bit different today. So tell a friend and tell a friend and make sure that you get this stream going, because it's time for some story time, I'd say. So
gather round.
Unlike my brother over at Touchy Gooners, I know how to use a screen share function. So what I've got here is October 30th, 2021. 3-0. Spurs getting spliffed and Oli surviving. This is delightful.
From one German Dan. After the game, or...
From one German Dan. And of course, if you guys weren't aware, that was in reference to El Sacico, where we lost 3-0 to Manchester United. Moving on. Exhibit B, November 2nd, 2021. Conte is a top manager. But what is all this Spurs are back chat? Back to what exactly? Again, from German Dan. I expect better, my brother. I expect better.
Interesting.
March 6th, LeBron James, LeBron James champions gift with a cigar. Oh, we in the top four now?
Objection, nah, Cap, you're not.
He seemed to be enjoying the season around March time. May 16th, if you guys weren't aware, this was around the time where... these men got slapped at the lane. Wins versus 14th place Newcastle and 16th place Everton secures Champions League qualification. That's a good position to be in. If we fail to reach Champions League qualification, we have bottled it. No two ways about it.
You damn right.
So I'm trying to figure what I'm trying to figure out what bottle he was referring to. Bailey's in my coffee type of day on May 17th. What were Bailey's to suit the game, my brother? God damn.
Absolutely.
So that's the first segment of story time. Obviously, I do have some more receipts, but the temperature in the room just rose just a little bit. Let me just say this. I've got love for German Dan. That's my guy. But German, my nigga, I hate it. Had to be him. His boy. He's talking about spliffed. And them boys got rolled up, mate. Boys got rolled up. So does anyone else have some receipt to bring to the fore?
What I will say before anyone else dashes their receipts in, where I have to rate German Dan is before the fact he was like, if we as an Arsenal lose these two games, we've bottled it. Because a portion of, not the Touchy Gooners, man, a portion of Arsenal fans are doing this thing where it's like, you know, fifth with the squad we have, it's a great achievement. We did back-to-back eighth. It was really, like, we've done really well considering the squad we had. Like, we're not the fourth best team in the league. And it's like, I'm not going to lie, this was one of the worst top four fights ever. Like, in terms of squad quality, if we're keeping it buck. So it's like, I have to respect the Touchy Gooners, man, where they're like, nah, like, we actually bottled fourth. Like, because a lot of guys are pretending that fifth does them a favour. This is the stage in the process. Because I know Arteta bought Willian and said, we want to win the Champions League in 3 years. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, I have to respect those guys, really and truly. But at the same time, hold that.
And we need the drop from the North London game. Put back in the intro forevermore, because they need to hold that permanently. Who else has some receipts? I'm liking this. This is the new segment called Shit Gooners Say.
Tom Snow, and I know you had some loaded.
Yeah, man, I'm not gonna lie. Like, there was one that really kind of got me, man, because, you know, about a year and a bit ago, well, 2 years now actually. They knew that they were recording a little sign from Amazon, you know, putting cameras behind Jose and that, thinking, okay, this is going to be definite car crash TV. To which now, you know, the 2021-22 season started, and it was announced that Arsenal were going to be on the, you know, All or Nothing documentary series. And a certain guy named Gunnar Torp on, you know, around the 5th of on the 5th of May, he actually had the cheek to put out certain of the wordings of, when Amazon signed us for this year's All or Nothing, they hoped they were going to get behind the scenes great footage of a car crash season. Instead, we possibly got a fairy tale ending where we secured Champions League football at Spurs' stadium. And to end this is what I just enjoyed the most. They must be licking their lips. My goodness, that day we crashed it on them. My goodness, we crashed it on them. Holding, nowhere to be seen. Odegaard, nowhere to be seen. We're still looking for Saka. We're still looking for Saka. Them man tried it. They thought that they could do a little something at our ground with a full stadium. Disrespectfully, my guys, hold it. Absolutely hold it.
I'm loving the energy. I'm loving the energy. Moving on. Owen, I know you've got some receipts in your bookmarks.
Yeah, I've got one which was just essentially my personal favourite because, like Ahoyo alluded to, like, Touchy Gooners are still the ops, but they do keep it real most of the time. And, you know, they'll admit their shortcomings. But there's an affiliate with Touchy Gooners called Le Grove. It's a pretty big account. I'm sure he's been on their pod a couple of times. Thinking it's an American-based fan, but I think this is a reaction to, obviously, us getting fourth in this, like, you know, Spurs. Bullet points. The difference in the end was the deadliest, in brackets, least trophied strike partnership in the EPL, in the Premier League. It's pretty loaded, backhanded compliment to make. Thank you. They had goals, we didn't. Facts. But let me get into it. Those two will never, in caps, have a season without injury like that again. Spurs will not have the same luck. But essentially, like, even without the injuries, he's alluding to this strike partnership never getting these kind of goals like that again, despite obviously proving the last few seasons they are, in fact, shooters. And then to then conclude, before the full conclusion, but this bit's the best bit. They will be lucky to get 64 points next year. And now, given that we obviously, I think we got 71 this year, obviously this was before the equity injection that we got yesterday at the time of recording, but still to not expect us to get more than 64 points with a full season under Conte with those two shooters up top is... it's insane. He kind of said in the previous tweet that they'll get 10 more points than they did this season with the right signings, and we'll finish, what, in 64? With 64, it's insane.
Absolute insanity. There was a lot of weird energy afterwards as well. Like the sort of a slap toss type of commentary where people just don't want to admit that they were the ones who had top four in their hands and totally fucked it up. Like, it has nothing to do with anybody else. The fact of the matter is they dropped the ball, they bottled it. Moving on. Anyone else with some receipts?
I have, it's less a receipt, more reaction from a man by the act of Baba Blue. I'm sure he didn't intend to ever end up on the New Spurs Order podcast, but he gave some absolute gold in, what's it called, a Twitter voice note. So I'm just going to play a few seconds and I just want everyone to sort of empathize with Baba Blue and feel the emotion that he was emitting after losing said game. I, to be honest, I can't remember if this was after the North London derby or after the Newcastle game, but we're going to enjoy regardless. So bear with me, gentlemen.
We keep quiet with the support in the end. Now that the team matters the most, Arsenal has collapsed. Arsenal has collapsed. What did we do, you, this club?
Wow, wow.
That's why he said burn this to the ground.
I forgot how funny it was.
Oh, that is hilarious. Oh, jeez. Dave, I know you got something.
You know what? I actually can't find the recording, but I want to shout out my boy Lewis. Obviously played, you know, Touchline. I've been probably one of the founding guys, you know, old school, go all the way back to the beginning. And obviously I'm sure he's lived through many a disappointment with Arsenal over the past few years, the 8-8, all that kind of stuff. But there was a main pod that he jumped on a few months ago, and I did comment on this because he was looking all suited and booted, apparently. Suited and booted. And he was questioned, oh, how come you look all suited and booted? And he made mention that he'd popped to church that day. Now, why he popped to church, we don't know. But the reason that he gave was that he offered up a prayer for their top four hopes. So I just want to just make mention. I don't know which God you're praying to, my friend. Because my God.
I was praying to Conscious.
We in. Like, I don't know what Fugazi church that was. But it did crack me. I did mention it, Jim. But at the time, they were high-flying, you know, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it just goes to show. I think he even mentioned that he paid his tithes and offerings to make sure that he got it in. So he might need to check where to get the paper receipt or where that money went. if I can find the audio, I'll try and find it in a quick minute.
I might need a little bit of help for this next one. As anyone that follows the New Spurs Order account or myself, you'll know that me and Dan Cougs go back and forth quite a lot. And I must admit, he is a balanced individual more often than not. I enjoy his conversation. So this is another story time segment. So February 1st, of course we miss out now. Lol, it's inevitable. It's not just fans. This is what journos were writing when Conte got announced too. I'll be remembering them when Spurs finish above us for the sixth season in a row as well. So a nice bit of foreshadowing there. But for some reason, my brother Dan Cougs, he lost himself. The only team that have beat us in the past 4 months are City and Liverpool. But now we're going to start losing every other week. I don't buy it, he says on March 21st. To which SV Carbaholic of Touchy Gooners replied, you man a confident boy, Arsenal PTSD finishing me. That and the fact that we can't afford injuries, suspensions in key areas. Lovely, lovely scenes, that is.
Delicious. Oh, look at those results.
Let's have a look.
Delicious.
So, ouch. Apparently, Skeng Teta believes that Arsenal losing 5 or 6 of the last 10 games is a little bit bookie. So let's do some quick maths. April 4th, Crystal Palace 3, Arsenal 0.
That's one.
That's the L.
April 9th, Brighton 2, Arsenal 1. That's an L. April. Southampton 1, Arsenal 0. We'll skip over there. Let's go fast forward to Thursday, 12th of May. Tottenham Hotspur 3, Arsenal 0. It's looking like they haven't won all of those games, he said, because Newcastle 2, Arsenal 0 on the 16th of May. Boy, lads, it's looking a bit crazy out here, man. Guys were writing checks that they could not cash. A lot of broad, very, very boastful predictions. A lot of energy. A lot of false dawns. And the fall, how beautiful it was.
I have to say, I think one of my favorite parts of, you know, that run of L's sandwiching the few W's they did have, I remember, you know, a certain fan base, the Coppin guys, you know, were dunking on us after they signed Luis Diaz. And fairly so, you know, we got a bit excited about, you know, clearly talented player. and we got gazumped, you know, by my neighbors, in effect, because I live in L15, you know what I mean? But I thought it was absolutely delicious that the one and only Bruno Guimarães, the much lauded Bruno, the only Bruno that I actually take into account in the Prem, was the one who solidified the crashing on them at St. James. Can I say St. James's Park? Is it Sports Direct Arena? Is it still that? Whichever one it is.
St. James's, no.
Yeah. St. James. I just thought it was extra delicious that of all the players to do it, it was a half-fit Benoit own goal, and the only Bruno we recognised crashed on them as well.
Delicious indeed. And I think I found the audio. Oh, yeah. Load it up. Load it up, my brother.
where you come from? You know, I had to give my offering, you know, for Arsenal to get into the top four. So I just come back from church. So I just want to
make sure that you don't. The fact you went to church, you are definitely.
Listen, it's time to be a believer, you know. We're believing. God shall tell me, you know, we need to spend more time in the presence of God. So I gave my time today, you know, to make top four.
Mm.
We put it all in the hands of God now.
Yeah. Hey, my God is good.
His God has sieves for hands. It's mad out here.
Yeah,
crazy,
listen,
dog. Yeah?
Listen, my man said that we put it in the hands of God. So obviously God must be a Spurs fan. Let's go.
You gotta love it. You gotta love it. So, lads, obviously, what those tweets indicate is that we've had a long, hard season pause. A lot of ups and downs. Obviously, it's only right that we sort of contextualize everything. Obviously, we got the result in the end, but it wasn't all sunshines and rainbows. Shout out to the last day at White Hart Lane. So, lads, what I want to do is get your grades for the season. Obviously, within the context of it, we started the season with we don't talk about no. And by around November time, we got Antonio Conte. So I'll start with you, Tops. What were your thoughts going into the season in terms of predictions? And what do you feel is a fair grade for where we ended up? Two-part.
Personally, like, I just felt like Nuno was automatically the wrong appointment. I personally felt, and I remember saying as well, I felt like he was a manager that failed upwards, and because we were so incompetent in our scrambling for a manager, I felt like it was the only thing that could. It was the only sort of option that we were left with, to be honest, after some horrible names were put into the hat as well. I can't say that I felt like some of the players that we signed were going to be like amazing. I always kind of had my doubts about the current guys, but I wasn't really moved by Emerson. And to be honest with you, even after the sort of positive start we had in the season, can you guys hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah, still a little rough, but
finish up. Even after the positive start that we had to the season, I could kind of tell that it really wasn't sustainable, just because the style of play wasn't inspiring at all. There were no real numbers, no real metrics that kind of pointed to it being a style of football that we could kind of continue doing throughout the season. And it looked like there were lots of gaps that needed to be filled. And obviously, after those first 11 games, it was very, very obvious, even the way that he was picking the team, the way the team was playing, and obviously the results that we were getting. So to be honest with you, a change was needed. Like you said, Si, it was good that Daniel Levy just decided to run it back and bring Conte in. I know Conte's he's a brilliant manager. I know that he has a really positive and, you know, inspiring sort of reputation behind him. But if anything, what we needed the foremost was just a coach, someone to try and get these players playing in a way that suits their skill sets. And honestly, he did. I felt like whilst he spent a number of months getting to know the players, getting to know the kind of style of how some players fit in different systems, different formations, I kind of felt that he revived our season. In many respects, I always kind of gave this season for him as being not a free pass, but I was happy to take anything that he would do for us because I felt like he's the sort of manager that needs to take it from the beginning with a full preseason, with a choice of his own players and playing the way that he wants to. So honestly, it's a huge, huge bonus that we've even got to this point. I'm not going to lie. I wasn't sure that we could get it, but just because a mixture of things with regards to how poor some of the other teams were, the run of form that we had, and also looking just at the run of games that we had towards the end of the season, I probably kind of still felt that maybe just before the Man City game, it wasn't really possible. After the Man City game, I kind of started to believe we lost immediately to Burnley, but I always still felt that with number of games we had in hand and us playing better under Conte, that it was always going to, it was closely going to come to a bit of a head towards the end of the season. So all in all, like in terms of a grading, I'm going to give us a B minus. I'm going to give us a B minus because I don't think we were excellent or good at any point this season, apart from towards the end. And I actually think, if anything, we have way exceeded our expectations of this season based on how we started.
I think that's fair. Owen, so in the lead up to us sort of getting Conte, obviously the group chat was pretty aggressive at times. No one was happy with Nuno. I can't believe I said his name. And obviously the idea of us potentially going back for Conte was almost a pipe dream to some. Obviously, with you being one of the people that is a bit more supportive of Enoch, what were your expectations? And did you feel like they would be able to get us back into a situation where we could salvage the season?
To be fair, I don't think I would say I'd be a supporter of Enoch, but maybe more a Levy sympathiser, and I kind of separate the two. Obviously, going into this summer should be a different story, but we'll get into that. In the lead up to Conte, it's obviously we had, you know, who as manager, and obviously that the expectations were so uninspiring. I don't think anyone would have put us higher than sixth to finish in the league this year. We started what was essentially this uninspiring project with Paratici. We signed younger players. We weren't really looking to qualify for the Champions League. And it was weird. Like, you felt like Paratici and other powers that be were kind of shoehorning you-know-who to kind of play a four at the back and try and play in the way which they thought suited the team instead of what actually worked for you know who at his previous club. That didn't last long. And getting Conte, I feel I was one of the few people that believed we could get him if we did go back into him. I'm not sure about the optimism for others. I remember doing a poll on the Twitter account. I think it was like 70-80% in favour of saying, you know, we got absolutely no chance in hell. But I like to believe, one, Levy's still listening to the fans. He's been very reactive since, this time last year. And obviously he's got nowhere else to go. Gone in for him, used the connection for Paratici, and you saw Conte's blueprint straight away and actually having a structure that we can use to play out with. And obviously Conte's got credit in the bank. I do feel vindicated as well, in the sense that I said from the start of the season, I thought we'd always suited like a 3/5 at the back structure. I thought like that's what our players suited the best. So we didn't have the best defence either, so that would give them
for
a bit
context,
of protection.
For context, that was in favour of Potterball, wasn't it?
It was in favour of Potterball. I thought Nuno, if anything, would play that as well, because that's essentially the formation he used for most of his time at Wolves. But yeah, it was in favour of Portable because we had already tried for Conte in that summer and failed. So I felt like in that time, Potter was the best viable option we could get because Brendan Rodgers had turned us down as well, right? So, I don't think that was the worst shout seeing how Brighton performed this year. But, you know, it's not quite Conte. And just a quick fast forward. We obviously started really, really well. He had a bit of an unbeaten run and we went into a difficult Christmas period, or January period, up until the Burnley game, which he obviously went on that kind of infamous run, which I think he tried to play off as like tactical to kind of motivate his players and have Levy, I guess, on his toes. But yeah, that is essentially the turning point.
Indeed. And speaking of that turning point, obviously, before I move on, do give us a letter grade for how we ended up this season. So what would you give it on a grade scale?
To give a grade, my bad, I forgot to give. So from the start of the season, we've massively overachieved. So I've got to give it an A+. We would have been able to that's as good as we could have possibly done. Like maybe with one more win, we could have finished above Chelsea, but it doesn't matter. We can kick on, and you know, we've got this cheeky little investment now. So, you know, we'll see if we can
beat. Skipping ahead. I'm going to mute you in a sec, and you gave it A+. I'm disappointed there. Error on the topic of that sort of weird period where we went through, where Conte ignited a lot of the haters into saying, "See, he's not even going to last a season." Obviously, there were a lot of murmurs about us doubling back for an ex-manager, one Maurizio Pochettino. Obviously, you're one of the more vocal people when it comes to the romanticism around the club. How were you feeling around that time?
I can't lie. I had to take extended leave. I was stressed from being a Spurs fan. Like I was kind of stressed. It's not that I dislike Pochettino. It's that I remember the down times. I remember, you know what I mean? Like I remember the bad times, man. And I thought, for example, like in that, like if we take ourselves back, maybe like 4 months ago, and we just think before, like we started, I guess, appreciating some of the things that Levy's done, like Conte hasn't come in. It was a thing like, wow, are we going to go into like the next year with a Conte sort of that's disgruntled? He's about to leave at any moment. Levy's not supporting him and Enix not going to support him. Are we going to go into that, or are we going to go back for a manager as well, like Pochettino, who we've already seen can't really challenge Levy on that level? Like he can make sly comments, but he's never challenged Levy on the level that Conte's kind of put the pressure on him that Conte's put on him. So, I mean, I'm so glad we didn't go down that path. All respect to Pochettino, but I'm glad we didn't go back to him. And I'm glad that there was some shame put on Enic. There was some shame put on Levy, because I'm probably one of the people that support him a bit more in this group, man. But to be honest, like I'm glad. I think he's doubled back on his mistake and he's made it work out, man. Like, they know we're back in top four. There's no way we can go into another season without supporting the manager that got us into top four. It would be ridiculous.
100%. And in terms of how the season ended and with the context of the entire season, what would be your grade?
So I agree with Owen in some ways about we definitely overperformed in terms of like our whole season grade. But I would have to downgrade it for certain players, like certain individuals, how they performed across the season. No names, but you know, people like Emerson, Aubameyang, Reguilon, I'm sorry, but you're up there too. And you know what, I'm going to downgrade it to roughly like about a B. and say that there's definitely been some positives, man. But if we don't deal with some of these negatives, then yeah, it's going to affect us next season too.
100%. Speaking of players and obviously the sort of transition into a better spell under Conte, myself and you, Dave, we did a Conte expose before he joined, and we ran a lot through his tactical style, his philosophies, and we basically spoke about like what additions would be needed for the team. Obviously, going into January, we didn't really know what to expect. What are your biggest takeaways from that January window? Because obviously we know the positives, but encapsulate the whole thing.
Well, I think for me, the biggest thing about January wasn't just the two we got in, but actually the ones that we let go. It's the fact that he realised that even against NS Mora, that Lo Celso couldn't tie his shoelaces. He realised that, you know, even against, who was it that we played in the FA Cup? Morecambe, whoever. Ndombele was strolling around the place. I think it's just that kind of coming to that realisation, going, right, just get them out. Doesn't matter how they get out, just get them out of it. I'm not going to play them. I'm not going to work with them. I'm not going to persist with them. And to shift, four players and get two in, and for the two to have that kind of input, I think we have to go and say, yeah, brilliant. That's a brilliant transfer window. And the fact of the matter is, and if you, you know, banter aside, you look to all the different commentaries on the past 2 weeks of the season, the last 2 weeks of the season, and it's ended, and the week since, everyone's talked about the fact that the reason why Spurs were able to be in the position we're in is because of those two signings, right? If you swap Kulusevski for Lucas Moura or Dele Alli playing in an advanced role, if you swap Bentancur for Harry Winks or Ndombele or Lo Celso, we're not in the top four. And that's the reality of the situation, do you know what I mean? And whether these players, you know, they come back or they stay or they go in, they're being sold for peanuts or whatever, they did not contribute to us getting to where we got to. So January was very crucial. And I think that is, for me, before Burnley, I think January was where it all turned around. Because even when those players came in, we could see they had something. Okay, and I think you have to remember, January, we had injuries. Romero was out for 6 weeks. You know, when we had that, you know, back-to-back-to-back weeks of playing Chelsea, you know, we didn't have Romero. We ended up playing one of those games with like six defenders on the pitch. With number two playing as like a right winger or something, you know, or left winger. I can't remember where he was on. So it's you know, we had a lot of issues to deal with coming out from, like, you know, COVID in December, injuries, all that kind of stuff. So for them to have a positive January and then to see the impact of that, and like I said, to finish off the season with those two players, Bentancur and Kulusevski, being so critical and getting us up and running, and then obviously Son and Kane, the main men, finished it off for us, you know, with those goals. So I think, yeah, we can't deny it's been crucial. If I was to give the season a lesser grade, I'll probably go with a B+. You guys know me, I work in a school. I always like to have a bit of room for my students to be stretched and challenged. So I'm looking at Spurs now going, right, you did what you did, but let's be honest, you got it because United were in 3-4 and Arsenal are Spursy.
They need their own word for it, man. They wouldn't need their own word for it.
Honestly. But yeah, you know, you think about it, you know, it's been six. To be honest, as much as we banter and whatever, and we play the audios and stuff, it has been 6 years. Like, it actually has been 6 years where, since they finished above us in the league. We've qualified for the Champions League, I think, 4 out of those 6 years. Like, actually, this whole thing about Spurs are back to where? Well, we're back to finishing in the top four, because in the past decade, that's what we've been doing. Do you know what I mean? Like, check the receipts. So I think it's just a case of us now using this as a springboard. Let's back Conte. Let's get the players in that we need, and let's push on and see what we can do next season. Solidify a top four place, get some silverware. Let's see what happens.
Eloquently put. Ohio. So with us ending the season in such a visceral battle for the top four, did you feel like at any stage it was in doubt, or did you feel like we had the upper hand?
I'm going to be so honest with you. I think it only really became a possibility to me maybe just before the Arsenal game, because I feel like they'd won. Did they lose the game just before us? I feel like they lost. Did they lose Brighton 1-0? Something like that?
Let me pull up my receipts.
I feel like it was something along those lines. I was a bit worried because obviously a lot of our form was win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, loss, win, loss. Do you know what I'm saying? And I can't lie, I didn't actually think, I thought we were going to lose out by the skin of our teeth. It would have been good banter to see Arsenal, you know, get excited at finishing second in their Champions League group. And then, you know, getting absolutely slapped in a round 16, probably another 10-2 on the cards. That would have been great to watch. But I think the possibility came when I saw, like, we just looked really good in the North London derby. Like, yeah, the first 20 was a bit shaky, you know what I mean? But we just, like, and, you know, everyone can say 10 men, but at the end of the day, how many games have we played? There's been times we've played 10 men and we've not looked that threatening. Do you know what I'm saying? It was nice for a change to see, okay, for a change, we've smelt blood and we're going for the juggler even more. Whereas the last couple of years, it's not really felt like we've done that quite a lot. Like, there was a little bit, it's nice to see, like, some kind of killer instinct developing. And, you know, yeah, Norwich would have already been relegated. Yeah, their home record shit. But again, there's been times in the past where it's like, you know, we just don't have to, like, it's kind of been a feeling like, oh, we just don't have to lose today. And then you could kind of, you could smell the nerves through your TV. Do you know what I'm saying? So I think that's been my favorite part of the top four run, and just being like, you know, we smell the chance and we actually do something about it and take it. Do you know what I mean?
100%. And what would you say would be the letter grade for this season based on
I feel like, so to try and segment it a bit, because obviously you've got your report card. Transfers-wise, in January, I'd give us an A. I think it was... I don't remember ever seeing Tottenham signings personally hit the ground running that fast. Like, I'm probably sure if I thought about it a bit more, I could probably think of some. But considering, you know, half the fan base tried to get on Kulusevski for 10 minutes where he clearly wasn't match fit. But I think I don't remember two Spurs signings that have hit the ground running that well, especially in January. I'm sure I'll probably think of one. So give us an A for transfers. Mentality-wise, you know, considering everybody likes to use that certain word on us, I think mentality-wise, I've got to give us an A for the running. First half of the season gets a U. Nuno gets an A. For his
man hit him with them university grades.
No, I mean, straight U.
Gets U,
bro. Like, for the first three games, like, I can't even give Nuno an A for the first three games because we looked fucking shit. So even that, like, first three games is a C+, drop down to a U. Player improvements, specifically number two, Emerson, Ben Davies, and Sessegnon. I think I'll give them, man, in particular, I'll give them a C+. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, there were certain men, and no offense to them, you know, certain men were only capable of doing the foundation paper, where the most you could get was a C. So I'm giving them a C. Daniel Levy, I'm going to give him a B, mainly because he had the balls to turn around and be like, hey, he was on hands and knees, like, hey, Conte, please, man. Like, I'm sorry, innit? I'm sorry. And then, like, I was so shocked. I think that's the thing that struck me the most this season, that we actually somehow, like, because for such an emotional person to bring Conte back second time of asking, I think that's a bit of a masterstroke. And it's kind of felt like the way Conte has expressed himself, and he basically tells off Levy every time. Like, obviously, Dave, you're a teacher. I'm sure you've seen that at parents' evening. Certain man, like, they're cowering in front of the teacher, and, like, the parents just looking at, you can see the look in their eyes. I feel like Conte gives Levy that look every single night on FaceTime. And that's why we are where we are. And that's why I've got 150 mils, you know what I'm saying? So I think overall, I'm gonna give it a B+. I was inclined to a minus, but I'll give it a B+ for now.
Fair play. If you guys haven't noticed, we've had Asa join us from across the pond. How are you today, my brother?
It's a beautiful day in sunny California, so I'm doing good.
As you are our correspondent over there, we are going to take a leaf out of season summaries done on the state side. So I want to know three things. First and foremost, I want to know the MVP at Tottenham Hotspur for this season.
So we're gonna for MVP, and I'm gonna do this as like the least Skip Bayless bullshit as possible. Like, I'm trying not to do the hot take thing.
It's my turn.
But I mean, look, you can't look at this team, and if you're going to go players on the field, if you're going to go MVP as most valuable player, I mean, look, there's a guy who scored 23 goals. And look, did he spend half the year playing like crap? Yeah, he did. But he scored 23. And you know, you look across the road in North London, and they would kill for someone who could score, you know, 13. So six. Three. Yeah, like they don't – so like goal scoring matters in this game. And look, like if you wanted to say like who did I believe technically was the best player, you know, from soup to nuts, it's Romero, and I don't think it's particularly close. But look, goal scoring matters, and Sonny put in 23 without a penalty. So, you know, it's I said I was going to try not to be Skip Bayless-ian, but that's – I mean, you got to play the game.
So second up is defensive player of the year. I think I know what you're going to say, but this might be where I chime in and maybe debate you quickly, because that's what American sports analysts do. So
it's what we do. It's we embrace debate. That was the worst era of ESPN possible. It was awful, unwatchable. Anyways, so in terms of defensive player of the year, I mean, it's Romero, but I want to get I want to shout out my take that I've had on this podcast now for like 2 months, which is that Ryan Sessegnon, defensive stopper, is the future. And I just want to like put him up there. Like he's going to be like the Jaren Jackson Jr. who doesn't ever win the award, but he's constantly in the top three. That's Sess's career trajectory. But it's Romero. I mean, the way that the defense looks with him and without him is night and day. And I've seen Eric Dyer with Romero and without Romero. And it's not Eric Dyer. And Ben Davis, like, look, he looked good as a left center back, and I do not trust him. And as for the guy wearing number two, I have nothing to say. Nothing to say.
And last but not least, I would say most improved player, or sort of Britishizing this, would be young player of the year.
Okay. So for this one, it's tough because – I don't think that we saw Kulusevski improve at Spurs, right? Like he improved based on what we thought he was. But this is I'm gonna give you like a peek behind the scenes of my crap with NBA Most Improved Player of the Year. You can't be an improved player if you're like a lottery pick, right? Like if everybody thought you were gonna come in and be awesome, and then it takes you 2 years to be awesome, like that doesn't make you an improved player. It makes people dumb. Kulusevski, like we were all just wrong about how quickly he could hit the field running. And that's not on him. That's not that he improved. It's just he was allowed to play. So if we're going to do improved player, I'm going to give credit to Eric Dyer. Like, look, like dude was unplayable for years. And he's, I mean, now he's at the point where like, I mean, should he be getting England international call-ups? Maybe. I mean, you know, like he's at that level, which to me, if you had told me that 2 years ago, I would have been like, is there a different Eric Dyer? Like, what are we talking about? Like the crappy midfielder who had to play center back? Like, what are we talking about? But he's done the job. As for youth, I mean, I don't know, Skippy, I guess.
Yeah, I think that particular award is a little bit of a funny one because it's split into two halves. Obviously, Skip didn't play the entirety of the second half of the season, and Kulusevski did Kulusevski stuff. So. I think that would be a joint award in terms of most improved. And I know I said that we'll combine those awards, but it has to be either Dyer or Davis. Again, they have to split that shit. Because as far as I'm concerned, Dyer was the best defender this year just because he offered stability, didn't make a single mistake leading to a goal, anchored the defense pretty much. Like we kept the majority of our clean sheets with him in the team. And although Romero is a fantastic front foot defender, I feel like he was very reliant on the fact that both Dyer and Davis were stalwarts in the team and very, very, very responsible. But that's a conversation for another day, I'd say. What would be your letter grade before we move on to other proceedings?
Sure. So I think I'm going to give them a 3-5. So in the college system over here in America, you get numbers. So a 3-5 would be like an A-, I guess. You know, like, look, like the fact of the matter is coming into the season after 72 days without a manager over the summer, after Kane not wanting to be here, after all of the crap, after not investing, not really. Coming into this year, I thought we weren't going to make Europe. I thought eighth. I was like, you know what? Like the Conference League is going to be a huge detriment. We're going to have to split time. It's going to be a distraction, and this is going to be bad. And you know, Nuno gets credit. Those 9 points in those first three games, they don't count less. And you know, he gets credit for that. I mean, was he a good manager? No. Did he deserve to be here? No. But those three games counted. And from the beginning to the end, those points count the same. So from the first moment to the last, I mean, beating Man City, you know, and then humiliating Norwich. I mean, A minus vibes, you know, could it have been better? Yeah, probably. But the vibes of the season were just like routinely and consistently positive outside of that, like, what, late October bit where it was just miserable. But I want to give a special shout out, like in terms of your grades, like sometimes you do group projects and somebody else contributes like a lot to your grade. And I just want to give a huge shout out to Newcastle. You know, they did a job and just big ups there. You know, I'm not going to give Arsenal any credit because even when they tried to help us, they suck. So best of luck with them. I hear Europa League is a lot of fun. Best of luck. You know, Thursdays. Who plays on Thursdays? Couldn't be me. A-.
Fair enough. I like the way you put that. I will give my grade just because, you know, I can't just not participate, even with the hosting duties. I'd say for me personally, the not that any of you actually asked. Someone asked just so it's not awkward.
What's your grade, Si? What's your grade?
Oh, thank you.
Si, what is your grade? We want to know.
I'm so happy that you've asked. So I went into this season with basically no expectations whatsoever. In my honest opinion, it was a write-off from the moment that Nuno was named. And obviously us doubling back for Conte sort of raised spirits, but in all honesty, I just expected to treat it like a preseason. So the grade for me was capped at a B-, just from that standpoint alone. I don't think I could have said that I expected us to make top four when he initially joined, but soon after we started to see the tactics take shape, once we started to see the philosophy start to be implemented and resonate with the players, I did feel like top four was a possibility, even with the blips that we had towards the sort of middle point of the season. And the reason I say B minus is because, as I said before, we were basically looking at a free hit, and we were very much reliant on the fact that Arsenal had to slip up and Manchester United had to be totally was impotent. So ultimately it was never in our hands until the very last kick of the season. So I can't really attribute too much of the success solely to us, if I'm totally honest. I know you have to win the games that are in front of you, but at the end of the day, as was the case when we came third in a two-horse race and all of that good stuff, it's like you've got to be in it from the top of the season in order for me to really, really double down and say, okay, cool, we totally deserve that. So yeah, B minus for me, and that might be a little bit harsh, but I'm optimistic for the next season, and I feel like we have some real top level excitement coming our way, which leads us nicely into the news this week. Different format from usually. We usually do the news at the top of the week, but we've just got £150 million worth of investment through shares that Enoch have basically made available, if you will. There's a lot of excitement around the club. The fan base are losing their shit. It's everybody's football manager fantasy at this point. Where do you think that leads us? Because we've heard the names that have been mentioned. We know the deficiencies in the squad. Do you feel, and I'll go to you, Era, first, do you feel like Levy and Enoch are going to just splash that money, or do you think there's going to be caveats to it?
You know, it's interesting. Like, at first, I thought it was just like just playing up to the audience, just saying like, yeah, there's money available. And then when they kind of made it clear that it's separate to like the Champions League money and everything else, I did get the impression that we're going to spend it. I'm interested to see like the guys that we got out in January, like if we actually can get some good money for them. And then it seems like at least one, you'd expect at least one sort of like marquee signing to come in. I'm just not sure whether it's going to be in a position that we need necessarily. But yeah, let's see how it goes, man.
And Tops, in terms of the names that have been mentioned, who is the one that stands out for you as the biggest game changer?
Bastoni for me. 100. Bastoni for me. I feel like Davies has done an excellent job this season. But I feel like a player of Bastoni's ilk, his quality, he's someone that could really take us to the next level. Not only is he skilled and sort of honed or trained in Conte's style of football, having played under him at Inter, but you look at a lot of his physical attributes. He's tall, he's quick, he's imposing, but also on a technical level, he's extremely, extremely technically proficient, very good long passer, very good infield passer, and also provides a dual threat from overlapping as well. I understand that the fee's going to be a lot, it's going to cost a lot, but this is the kind of player, in my opinion, that moves the needle for us.
100%. And Owen, on the topic of players that we've been linked to, obviously there's been murmurings that Paratici missed a free transfer, is potentially going to look back at an Eriksen or Bale or potentially one of the other free agents. Of the ones that have been named, what combination of two would you take
out of those names that you just put across?
So of the free transfers that are available, so you've got Eriksen, you've got Bale, you've got guys like Dybala, Pogba, so on and so forth. Name two of any free transfers, which ones would be your pick?
I would definitely need more of a range of the free transfers, because I was thinking about who would or what would move the needle for us the most from the question you asked, Tops. I mean, you know, my thoughts on Bale, that's a massive no-no for me. Even had to shut that down in a few spaces recently. There's still fans that want him. I just don't see it. He doesn't care about Spurs. That's it for me. And physically, he's pretty done. Eriksen, he would add a lot to our team, but obviously that's a very delicate one. So honestly, I'm not sure on that one. Paul Pogba, 1,000% yes. I'd have him all day, especially him coming through at the top level, pretty much under Conte in that Juventus team, which was a midfield three. But, you know, if it's Pogba, then you got to facilitate that. But for me, I'd say the second player that would, I guess, move the needle for us, maybe not a free transfer, definitely not free transfers. It's not going to be cheap, but someone like a Tarik Lamptey or a Yannick Carrasco at right wing back. That's been the weakest area over the course of this season in our team. I think it's one of those areas we definitely need to address in the summer as a contingency plan if teams are looking to try and figure us out and set up a deep block and, I guess, force us into obviously breaking them down. And we essentially have no creativity over that side. And what we saw in some games is obviously teams forcing us out to our right-hand side and just shutting out Kane. But if you know, if you've got someone who can, I guess, dominate their flank, take on a man, and look to create chances in someone like Lamptey or even a Livramento or a Carrasco, then yeah, so be it. I know obviously we're heavily linked with Jihad Spence, but I haven't properly watched him, to be honest. But if he's as good as some people have claimed him to be, then by all means, bring him in as well.
Fantastic insight. Ohio, I know that you are very much on the Dane Scarlett and Alfie Devine train, or more so Devine than Dane Scarlett. There are obviously, well, there were reports that Scarlett has now signed a new deal. What do you feel is the logical next step for both of those young men? Do they have a place in the squad going into next season, or is a loan the only option?
To add a bit of context, I feel like obviously we don't want to talk too much about Poch. You know, we're moving forward, but we appreciate the foundation he's laid down. I think one of the things that I personally will always hold against Poch is that I never felt he quite got it right with the youngsters. I feel like maybe he got actually a bit too much credit because Winks came through at a time, and obviously, I mean, Tim Sherwood had brought through Harry Kane. Do you know what I mean? So I think logically, I take my loans on Football Manager very, very seriously. I check everyone's training facilities. I check what formation and tactics the manager uses. If he's not using vertical tiki-taka or gegenpress, I'm not hearing it. But jokes aside, I feel like if we do sit, because I don't think we've had two talents that get spoken about to the level they do in a long time. So obviously, even when Kane come through, and maybe my ear wasn't to the ground enough, but we never really heard much about Kane before his debut. Do you know what I'm saying? Obviously, he had his loans at Millwall and Leicester, and to be fair, he's embodied proof that sometimes those loans don't work out. I think logically, a loan for Devine and Scarlett would be best. Personally, I think I was a bit disappointed Devine didn't even get minutes against Norwich. I think he's definitely good enough to have come on at 3-0, 4-0 when the game was completely done, but you know, Conte's manager does. I'll very rarely disagree with stuff Conte does. I think watching Devine in a few under 23 games, especially when he was chucking it to Danny Drinkwater, like the kid's not scared of nothing. Do you know what I mean? I think he could definitely mix it up in the Championship. My only fear is I hope he doesn't do what, and this isn't even trying to take a swipe at Arsenal, I hope he doesn't do a Wilshere. Not necessarily, you know, I'm not. I know we had a discussion the other day about if youngsters go to the Championship and if that affects their injuries long term, etc. But I think one thing that was always said about Wilshere, like as he got older when he came up from Bolton, is that, you know, 50-50 is one thing, but Wilshere will see a 30-70 challenge situation like it's a 50-50 and will go in and probably did it a bit too much for someone so technically gifted. So I think that might be my only potential worry for Devine in the future, even necessarily this season. But to centralise on your question, Scarlett, I'm not too sure if he's Championship ready, only because I still think he's a bit, and I think he's a bit slight, not necessarily small in terms of height or anything, because I think you could be 5'5 and still smash it in the Prem. I feel like he's still a bit slight and might have to learn a little bit of nitty gritty in League One, or maybe a slightly lower team in the Championship, because where was Conor Gallagher before? He was at Charlton, wasn't he? Conor Gallagher was at Charlton. I don't know if was that League One or Championship at the time. I can't remember if they were low.
It was League One.
They were League One. And then halfway through the season, Chelsea made the smart move of moving him to Swansea at the time. So I feel like that could be a potential option for either of them, to be fair. You know, because like I said, you don't want to overestimate their abilities. I strongly believe they have the ability for the Championship, don't get me wrong, but I think they need to be playing against men who are like playing for their mortgages. Do you know what I'm saying? Like they're comfy, but not as comfy as a Prem guy. You know, there's a certain, I wouldn't say Devine and that are too comfortable, because Devine came through the Wigan system. Do you know what I'm saying? He got dropped from Liverpool. Like, I know they both definitely know how to work hard. I don't think mentality is an issue for either of them. And it's a huge show of faith from the club to hand a contract to a kid who's, how old is Scarlett? 18?
18 this 18, year.
Yeah. And, you know, giving him a 4-year deal, could go on loan for 2 years, who knows? So I think logically, if we find a team that plays good football, you know, actually wants to play the ball on the ground and not just ping it past the centre mids. And I don't want them going to run to the Ertz teams. Do you know what I mean? I don't want Scarlett to go to a team and they're like, oh, we got the Blackie up top. Let's hit it long down the channel. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want him to go there. I know you lot know exactly what I mean as well.
I know exactly what you're talking
about. Bro, like, it was, I used to feel for my guys, man. But yeah, I think League One in a team that's like pushing, but obviously I think strong conversation need to be had with said managers. Like, look, we believe our boys are ready to play, but we need a level of assurance that, you know, they're also going to play. But then we also might have to dig a bit deeper, like what clubs are missing this type of player? Because, you know, whilst it's not like Football Manager again, where if I put key player or important player and you're not playing and I just tell you off and you start playing him, like, these guys have jobs and they have objectives and stuff, and we just have to do a lot of research, because I genuinely believe that these two kids could be part of like our starting 11 for a long time. We just have to get it right.
100%. And lastly, Asa, when it comes to building this squad going into next season, obviously there's only a finite number of places, and we do have a lot of guys on the peripheries of our squad, either on loan or guys who are sort of just dwelling in the locker room, making up space and taking up shirt numbers. So who would you say are the key outgoings this season to preserve that positive feeling and also clear some space and wage space for us to make real improvements next season?
Sure. So I want to first give my apologies to my good friend Owen. Number 8's got to go. Harry, it's time to go. It's time to go. That number 8 jersey, like, there's a lot of people who could rock it pretty well, and he's not that guy anymore, if he ever was.
It's not Weston McKennie, though.
It is Weston McKennie. That's
no, it's not.
He's coming. Had to.
Let me guess. You want Serginho Dest to wear the number 2 as well? Yeah.
I think that'd be fine for everybody involved. You know, you can. I think it'd be fine. Yeah. So I think going out. I think that each of the wingbacks, can leave. I think that'd be fine for everybody involved.
Which
like
ones in particular?
So Emerson, Doherty, and Reguilón need to go, as far as I'm concerned. I wouldn't mind if Doherty stays. I guess that those two games were really fun when he was not injured before Matty Cash took out his knees. But Emerson Royal is not a guy I want in the squad on this team.
Can't lie, I started to enjoy those compilations, man.
I mean, that was fun. But he's not a guy who's a fit, right? Like, I think he would say that too. I think that he's not a wingback. I think that offensive responsibilities such as they are, defensive responsibilities such as they are, he's just not at this level. You know, he lost out to your boy Serginho Dest at Barcelona, and that says something, right? So
that's your boy, but
I mean, collectively, he will be all of our boys soon when he comes in.
I quite like him. Too. I can't lie.
Ace, I've got a quick question, actually, as our Cali correspondent. Mm-hmm. Tyler Adams, never seen him play. Heard his name loads. Heard his link with Leeds. He looks good on FM. He can play fullback, centre mid. Like, what's he saying?
So he is. How's the best way I can put this? If you were splitting up the games, if you could take off players when you were shifting from defense to offense, Tyler Adams would be the best player in the world. He is incapable of having the ball at his feet. I love him to death, and he's the best defensive mid that America has and will have for a very long time. He's phenomenal defensively, but he cannot progress a ball. I love him to death. He cannot get the ball from defense to offense. And if you watch Leipzig, when he is on the field, they don't concede, but they need to figure out like ways to play around him. So if he's a guy who's on your team and you're trying to do stuff and you're asking him to play a big role, I don't know that that's going to be successful. Leipzig, he's been sort of out of the squad, you know, towards the second half of the league or second half of the year, but at a mid-table squad, I think he's fine. He's at Leeds. I don't want him to go to Leeds because Leeds already has enough Americans. And if they go down, it will be the worst thing for my country possible. Like, we can't have that. So, but shout out Brandon Aaronson. They announced that today. So he'll be super annoying the two times that we play him because that's his entire aesthetic.
Thank you, Cali correspondent.
It's what I'm here for. I was at the El Trafico last night, LA Galaxy versus LAFC. There were multiple fights. It was a blast. It was incredibly dumb experience. Chiellini's coming. So in terms of like Juventus center backs, he's coming to LAFC. So that's going to be dumb as well.
Fuck that guy.
Second that.
Yeah, he's going to make a lot of money though, living in Southern California and not doing jack shit. So big ups to him. As somebody who lives in Southern California makes not a lot of money, but does pretty much jack shit.
Fair enough. Humble brag. So I think that's pretty much it for today's episode. In terms of what you can expect from us, obviously we will still be running the pod throughout the off season. Shout outs to American sports. I do want to do more topical chats over the course of this period. So if you guys do have any topics that you want us to broach, do let us know. As always, make sure you're following on the socials at New Spurs Order, all one word. Make sure that you are on this new YouTube feed, the Touchline community. Stay locked in, keep up to date. Feedback is always great. And yeah, on to next season. Come on, you Spurs, and fuck legacy fans. New Spurs order. Out.
Bow.
Games in hand over points on the board, baby.
Jesus.
On your head tops.
Belted into the net, brilliant goal. On debut, Tunge Ondombele has scored the equaliser for Spurs. Lucas Moura clips it. Oh, great goal! Stephen Bergwijn has arrived in North London! That is absolutely incredible on debut! Aurier!
Sports Social Podcast Network.